Imagine a constitutional weapon so powerful it can topple presidencies, yet so politically charged that using it risks tearing the nation apart. This is impeachment, America's constitutional emergency break designed to remove presidents who betray their oath of office. While elections typically determine who holds power, the founders recognized that some presidential misconduct couldn't wait for the next ballot. They created impeachment as democracy's safety valve, a mechanism that has threatened presidencies, ended one administration, and fundamentally shaped how presidents exercise power. Throughout American history, impeachment has served as both shield and sword, protecting the republic from corrupt leadership while simultaneously threatening to destabilize it through partisan warfare. By 1787, the Articles of Confederation's failure demanded stronger central authority while preventing tyranny, a core challenge for Constitutional Convention delegates in Philadelphia. Their solution combined overlapping powers between branches with impeachment as a special restraint. This system worked because they trusted George Washington as first president, expecting future leaders to follow his example of prioritizing national interest over personal gain. Elections alone weren't sufficient protection. George Mason warned that corrupt presidents could repeatedly win through dishonest means, while Benjamin Franklin viewed impeachment as a lawful alternative to assassination that preserved due process. The delegates chose high crimes and misdemeanors alongside treason and bribery as impeachable offenses. These weren't about severity, but about offenses against the state itself, what James Wilson called political crimes that harmed society in its political character, even if they didn't violate existing laws. After the Civil War, the nation faced another potential conflict, this time between President Andrew Johnson and the Republican Congress over Reconstruction policies. Johnson, born to illiterate parents in North Carolina, embodied the self-made man. His background shaped his contradictory views, opposing advancement for blacks while resenting the elite planter class. "Damn the Negroes," he declared. "I am fighting those traitorous aristocrats, their masters." Following Lincoln's assassination, Johnson betrayed Republican hopes for what Lincoln called a new birth of freedom. Though legally emancipated, black Americans remained oppressed, with southern states maintaining pre-war policies except for slavery itself. Johnson's impeachment came after he violated the Tenure of Office Act by firing Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. The House voted to impeach, with Thaddeus Stevens declaring, "We do impeach Andrew Johnson, President of the United States, of high crimes and misdemeanors in office." In the Senate trial, Johnson's allies secured votes through patronage. 7 Republicans broke ranks to vote not guilty, ensuring his survival by 1 vote. His removal would have weakened the presidency and established congressional dominance for years to come. FBI agent Angelo Llano balked at sealing the Watergate Special Prosecution Force's office during Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre in October 1973, having already concluded Nixon was involved in a cover-up. Nixon's firing of Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox marked a turning point. Despite months of revelations about dirty tricks, wiretapping, and an enemies list, most Americans only seriously considered impeachment after this action. When 5 men from his re-election committee were caught bugging Democratic headquarters in June 1972, Nixon chose obstruction over transparency. The smoking gun tape revealed Nixon ordering his chief of staff to have the CIA mislead the FBI by claiming national security concerns. The cover-up grew to include hush money and coach testimony. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Peter Rodino, mindful of Andrew Johnson's divisive impeachment, built bipartisan support by hiring Republican John Darr as special counsel. The committee voted 27-11 for impeachment, with Republican support. After the June 23 transcript release showed Nixon ordering obstruction, his Senate backing dwindled to 7 senators. Nixon resigned on August 9, 1974, rather than face certain impeachment. "Well, we just have to win then," was Bill Clinton's response when told Americans would forgive adultery but not perjury. His impeachment marked the third such crisis in American history, unfolding in the age of internet and 24-hour cable news. Unlike Johnson's impeachment centered on racial issues or Nixon's resignation over power abuses, Clinton's case began as a scandal before evolving into a constitutional crisis. At its core were questions about partisanship, morality, and presidential accountability. The Supreme Court's unanimous ruling in Clinton v. Jones rejected presidential immunity from civil lawsuits, allowing Paula Jones's harassment case to proceed. This search for behavioral patterns led investigators to Monica Lewinsky, a former intern who had a relationship with Clinton. Democrats opposed Republicans strategically, pushing for party-line votes to paint the impeachment as partisan. They also exposed Republican accusers' sexual indiscretions, shifting focus from perjury to hypocrisy. The House approved two articles of impeachment largely along party lines: grand jury perjury, 228-206, and obstruction of justice. The Senate ultimately acquitted Clinton on both charges. His strategy of denying the Lewinsky relationship for 7 months proved effective, reducing public impact when he finally confessed. Impeachment crises have accelerated from one in America's first 184 years to two more in just 25 years, with impeachment talk becoming increasingly normalized in modern politics. The founders intended impeachment as a constitutional safeguard against tyranny, not a partisan tool to invalidate elections. Mason's famous question, "Shall any man be above justice?" meant not just that leaders should follow the law, but that those entrusted with power must maintain the rule of law itself. Each past impeachment case offers critical lessons. Andrew Johnson's case demonstrates that when impeachments center on constitutional questions about separation of powers, partisanship alone doesn't determine outcomes. Nixon's case reveals that when support for an embattled presidency fades, it cascades rapidly. Though in our current tribal political climate, what constitutes irrefutable evidence has become subjective. Clinton's impeachment, built on narrower grounds of perjury to conceal private misconduct rather than abuse of constitutional power, never truly threatened his presidency. History suggests that future impeachments will likely follow similar patterns. Presidents accused of personal rather than constitutional transgressions may face impeachment but little threat of conviction. Only a scenario combining elements of all three historical cases, requiring senators to consider their consciences, backed by conclusive evidence strong enough to break party discipline, and overcoming a president's popularity, would create genuine risk of removal. The impeachment power is both necessary and dangerous, a constitutional nuclear option that can either preserve or damage democracy, depending on how it's wielded. Used properly against genuine abuses, it protects the republic. Used as a partisan weapon, it undermines public trust in government itself. The true test lies in whether elected officials will place constitutional duty above partisan advantage. In our polarized era, we must distinguish between policy disagreements and constitutional crises, between controversial actions and corruption. America's impeachment history teaches us that constitutional guardrails only work when enough people respect them. The founders provided tools to protect democracy, but these require courage and placing country above party. Impeachment was designed as democracy's medicine, powerful enough to cure constitutional crises, but toxic when wielded as a political weapon. Our republic's future depends on recognizing this distinction.